kite? Where did you get that kite?
I found it in the park. She kept it from blowing away.
Mary.
Owens.
Close your mouth, please, Michael. We are still not a codfish.
What do you say you and me take a walk over to the tavern?
Let's pull up a chair.
A little something to eat.
Welcome to the Mouse and Castles.
Come on, Johnny, what are we waiting for?
This is a gathering place for fans of all things Disney. So sit back,
chow down,
have some sips, and chit-chat about the magical world created by Walt Disney.
For too long, I've been parched of thirst and unable to quench it.
Well, hello. Hey, howdy, everybody. Welcome back to the Mouse and Castle podcast. I'm your host, Riley Blanton. So glad you've tuned in to this podcast. Man, let's trip a little light fantastic today. How's that sound, Aaron? Let's do that. Is that a thing we can do?
There's nowhere to go but up.
All right, well done. So Mary Poppins puns the whole podcast, right? That's the thing that's happening? I think it is. Dude, how's it going? Happy New Year. How's life?
It's going good. You should see me right now, Riley. I'm surrounded by Disney stuff.
You're surrounded by Disney stuff. Are you in your office? Are you?
I am. I'm in my, I moved to a new house and I have a room that's specific for my office / guest room / podcasting.
It's the podcast studio.
We can call it that for this show.
Yeah. And just don't tell your wife.
I have the decorations are all very Disney themed. Nice. So
more Disney than Star Wars, dare I say?
Right now, yeah. As far as like artwork hanging on the wall, it's definitely Disney heavy. And I'm also working on the Lego Disney castle over off to the side.
Oh,
here.
That's right. I saw you got that for Christmas. Or did Quinn get it for Christmas and you're building it? Or is it yours?
I got it for Christmas. We nice. Wouldn't get something like that for Quinn. Are you kidding me?
Come on. Forgive me for even asking. Like, why would you do
he's
that?
He's only six. He's not responsible enough to take care of that kind of Lego set.
Listen, that's why you got it, was so that you could demonstrate the responsibility that it takes to build a Lego set.
No, there's a
Lego
lock on this door. He's not even allowed in here to look at it.
Does he even know you got it?
No, he knows. He's watched me build some of it, but it's going to be a centerpiece decoration in this room once I have it finished. So.
Yeah, yeah. No, that sounds good. That sounds fantastic.
I have to give you a video tour of the room.
Well, definitely post some pictures on the Mouse and Castle Instagram. I want to see this Disney castle as it comes. How far along are you? Are you kind of
I'm like maybe a fifth of the way through. I think there's like, I forget. It's like 4,000 pieces, so it's very daunting.
That is my number one Lego set that I would like to own. That's not Star Wars, I have to say.
It's pretty cool.
Well, so we talked about on the last show, but you have finally seen. Ralph Breaks the Internet. You've seen it. It's happened.
I have seen it.
In which this clip that I have was when they first get to the internet, and you can see every single major website represented in this virtual, colorful land built by Disney, at least the brands that were willing to participate.
Which was surprisingly a lot of brands, and some that I was surprised to see.
Yeah, no, Amazon, Fandango, although Fandango was enormous. I'm like, Fandango isn't that big of a deal. They just want to sell movie tickets.
Well, Pinterest was a big part of it. Like, how much did Pinterest have to pay to actually be part of the plot of the movie?
I don't know how this works. I'd be interested to see.
Or
like
eBay.
Yeah, eBay better have paid a lot. That's like a
eBay
central
was like basically a plot central point. Plot point. And then Pinterest was kind of the final plot point. So
yeah. Well,
spoilers.
So
if you're a big Pinterest fan, spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
You're gonna love it.
But let me ask you, give me your like quick hit review now that you've caught up. Did you like it as much as I did? That's the real question, because I thought it was pretty great.
It was really good. It was fun. I laughed way more than I thought I was going to, and my son was with me, which helped. I think my son Quinn,
I've noticed this pattern. Yeah.
Yeah, he he just loved it. I mean, like when that shark came out of the sewer and ate the dog, I don't think I've seen Quinn laugh so hard.
He's about the right age too for that kind of humor.
Oh, like, definitely. Did, yeah.
Is he adept enough to, or was he picking up the whole like, oh, what was the big musical number at the end? You know, the race. Did he pick up on the
slaughter race? Or yes, a place called Slaughter Race.
Yeah,
Vanellope's princess song.
I thought that was amazing.
it was so great, and he actually has asked that because we have like an Alexa, like Echo.
Oh,
and so he asks Alexa to play that song on repeat now.
Nice.
So yeah, he loved it.
So in the pantheon of Disney animation, which again keeps knocking out hit after hit, where do you place it? Is it like up there with your Frozen, with your, dare I say, Tangled? Where do you place this one?
This one's tough because it's kind of a movie of its time.
True.
I don't know how well it's going to age.
Yeah.
So I think like right now it's really fun and I really enjoyed it, but I'm not ready to put it like up in the top list of my favorite all-time Disney movies, but I really, really liked it.
I don't know that it'll be a classic per se, but I think the fact that it is, you know, of its age very, very much is kind of what made it so good and so relevant.
It had some really good lessons, and it was interesting because it had a couple kind of key lessons, you know, internet, how the internet can be a really good thing, but it can also be kind of a thing that you have to be careful about, you know, reading the comments, you know, quote unquote, reading the comments.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so they played that up, but then they also had kind of the more adult kind of lesson that was about insecurities and friendships and how friendships evolve and even like jealousy and things like that, which I don't think really hit home with the younger audience.
Mm, yeah.
I know with Quinn, like afterwards, we were kind of talking about it and he didn't even know what the word insecurity meant. You know, he was just kind of like, what is that? What's going on here? And then when I was telling him about, I was like, well, you know how like you have your friend at school and then he might play with other friends and that might make you feel bad because he's not spending time with you. And he was like, no, I would just go find someone else to play with.
Well, see, AKA he does not have this problem.
He did. Yeah. So I think that's a problem that doesn't hit until probably teenage years and adults
kind
of deal with that. So he just liked the big giant monster Ralph at the end. You know, he wasn't really picking up on the message they were trying to give.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. Well, I'm glad you caught it. Do you see it in theaters or is it on streaming yet? I actually don't know what the release schedule for it is.
No, it's definitely still in theaters, although probably a little tougher to find. I just went on Fandango and found the closest theater to me that was still playing it, and luckily there was plenty of showtimes. So
nice.
I was actually a little surprised how easy it was to find.
It also did really well at the box office. It was pretty successful.
As Disney movies tend to do.
As we talked about in the last episode, if you haven't listened to episode 9, go back and catch it in the podcast feed. It was, we talked about the incredible financial year that Disney had. And a little bit later in the show, we're actually going to get a chance to look at what's upcoming, both in the parks and hopefully if we get to it, films as well. So stay tuned for that. But first, I got to talk to you about the most recent release. And that is Mary Poppins Returns. As you heard at the beginning of the show, we've both seen it. I may or may not have seen it 2 times. And then a 3rd time.
3 times?
I've seen this movie 3 times.
Is that more than The Last Jedi?
almost. Almost. It's definitely more than you've watched The Last Jedi.
3 times. Wow. You really like that movie.
So it's one of those, because it's not like most movies these days. I'm not going to go back like just by myself like some loser and watch it 3 times. And no, I used to do that all the time. But in this case, it was just like the timing worked out perfectly because on my way leaving here in Texas to head back home for the Christmas break, me and my girlfriend went and watched it the last night right before we flew out and had a great time. I believe it was the Alamo Drafthouse. No, it wasn't that. It was the Studio Movie Grill in Dallas, which is one of my favorite ways to watch a movie because you can have both your favorite adult beverages served to you and awesome like food. And I've never really talked about what it's like going to a movie theater with one Riley Blanton before, but pretty much what it is me just kind of mostly refusing to eat any kind of movie theater snacks except for nachos. And even the nachos are kind of trash, but man, it's better than everything else at movie theaters, which is candy and crappy dry popcorn with no flavor. And so
We do, we have something similar around here called Movie Tavern.
Yes. Yep. Yep. That's one.
So yeah, I'm like, I'm so snobby about going to movies now that I will not go to a movie.
I'll be like,
most times.
Will they serve me pasta? Will they serve me pasta? Thank you. Okay. I'll go.
Right. I can get a full meal and drinks. Yeah. That's the way to watch a movie.
Yes. And so that's how we watched it the first time. And then the family wanted to see it over Christmas. And then I got back and there a couple of friends here who wanted to see it who hadn't seen it yet. So I went and saw it three times because it's one of those things that if it's a movie I didn't enjoy that much, I'm going to like, I'll skip out. But it was definitely one of those that like, oh, this is great the first time I watched it. And then I listened to the music a bunch on Spotify, which makes the second viewing even more fun because you can kind of hum along with the tunes. And it's definitely one of those... it has a classic kind of timeless feel to it, and the music's already ingrained in my head. I've been listening to it nonstop. I loved this movie. Aaron, how about you?
I liked this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm ready to say loved it. I only saw it once. Mm-hmm. I wish I could see it again. I feel like this is the type of movie that would definitely benefit from a rewatch for me.
Definitely.
Because... you know, I think this movie's been around longer than both of us were born. So this is, you know, from the 60s.
Yep.
So we both grew up with this movie, essentially. And this was one that I watched a lot as a kid, you know, and knew the songs.
Same,
the characters and had some favorite bits. And just, I just recently rewatched it right before going to see it in the theater.
Oh, the original?
Or going to see the sequel in the theater. I would rewatch it because I wanted to be really familiar with the first one before I saw the second one.
Oh, interesting, because I just rewatched the original over at our friend Leslie's and right after watching this one several times.
Okay.
And it holds up well.
Yeah, the original definitely holds up really well, and I think I was just super nostalgic for the original, so when I went and saw the second one, or the sequel, it had a lot to live up to.
It does, and it's... It leans heavily into the nostalgia in some ways, structurally. Like the pace of the film, the sort of message of the film is very similar to the first. However, the delivery mechanism is almost everything's kind of turned up. Like Mary Poppins as a character is more weird and more just odd and unusual, a little bit sharp at times or a little bit aloof in a way that's closer to the books, which I remember them talking about back when they first introduced and played a clip from it and some music from it back at D23 last year. Man, by the way, I just want to observe, what a great opportunity going to D23 was, if for no other reason that now finally, a year and a half later, all the movies that they were showing off are finally out. And I can be like, yeah, back when they were talking about it at D23, we're finally almost out. Once Lion King comes out, I'll finally be able to shut up about, like, back when I was at D23. But no, when I was at D23, they played the whole overture. Well, they played, Lin-Manuel Miranda came, sang the opening number, and then they played the overture. And so, like, it kind of threads that needle of nostalgia with, like, the overture and the opening credits and the way the film's structured. But Mary Poppins, a little bit turned up. The music, the kind of animated sequences, a little bit more fantastical and over the top. And the tragedy, I mean, they go straight into the classic Disney format, the mom's dead. Surprise.
I thought that was a big difference in this movie, actually, that maybe was a little bit of a negative for me, is it almost was too dreary in points, where it was too sad. Like, I know the first movie kind of had its moments where it's like, oh, the dad is just not being a great dad.
Yeah.
But in this movie, it's like you're dealing with their mother's death and actually seeing the sadness and depression and tragedy that befalls the family, especially the father, Michael. And it's like, it was hard to watch. I was like, oh, this is a different take on Mary Poppins, because the first one was a lot more fun.
The first one was a lot more fun. I think both of those, we have to admit, Aaron, that we have the prism of childhood when we watched it so many times. I know as a kid, all of that went right over my head. Like a lot of the dad's struggling relationship and identity and lack of confidence and lack of support with his family, you know, and Like all of that part was just kind of flew over my head as a kid. But then when, and I hadn't seen it in years, but when I saw Saving Mr. Banks, it really kind of highlights that as the message of the film for when you watch it as an adult. And that totally changed. It's sort of like all of the memories of those scenes where, like, you at the end of the film, he kind of stands in the living room that kind of once was the, you know, really over the top. They even kind of play it up on a humorous level, over the top shrine to his manliness. You know, it's the King Edward's on the throne. It's the age of men. You know, they really play it up. What's funny is that like they're trying to make him like over the top and sexist in the 1960s. You know, which is really over the top. It's like, dear, the children have gone missing. Splendid, you know. and but like, so it's really over the top, but by the time you get to the end of the original, the message of the dad when he's like, he the same song as the refrain, my world was calm, well-ordered, exemplary, and he sort of his whole identity is crumbled around him. And that's a pretty serious theme, but it's kind of disguised more, and I think in Mary Poppins Returns, it's more on the nose.
Yeah, and it didn't involve death.
Yes, that's yeah. Significant difference.
And I did notice like a difference in tone in the movie. And I don't know if this was just, you know, because of the time that it's being released and kind of it's trying to feel more modern. But the first, like the original Mary Poppins was so much more whimsical in kind of the, even in the real world, quote unquote, real world. You know, like I'm thinking of the scene where all the nannies are kind of lining up for their job interviews, and then the wind literally like takes them away up into the air.
Yeah.
And this movie really, when you're in the real world, it stayed pretty grounded. Now there were some exceptions for sure. Like especially the
last number.
Scene.
Yeah. that was kind of off the wall. I'm not going to lie. Yeah.
But I kind of missed some of that whimsy, you know, that this movie didn't have as much as that the original did. It was almost like it was trying to feel a little more modern.
I think it started off that way, but I don't know if it finished that way. I think it got less whimsical. So perfect example, the whole Royal Dalton Music Hall sequence with the all the opening numbers right there, that seems very much in line with that sort of whimsical part, but that kind of disappears more into the background. Because you have the three most whimsical songs right in the first, I'd say, 30 minutes of the movie or so. You have the, like, this is my problem, because I have them all where the tunes are in my head, but I should actually have it. Yeah, I actually have it here on Spotify.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah. You have a conversation, super, super, you know, serious, where he talks, you learn about the
dead
mom.
Yeah, I was like crying in that scene.
Like, geez.
I'm like, I shouldn't be crying while I'm watching Mary Poppins.
but then you have, can you imagine that? The Royal Dalton Music Hall and A Cover's Not the Book, all within the first, I'd say, 30, 45 minutes. And then it gets more serious. You have like the place where Lost Things Go. And then it gets all the way to the end of the film when you kind of get to Trip a Little Light Fantastic. So maybe this is a good segue. Favorite musical numbers? Any of them jump out to you?
I thought some of them were really memorable. I think we'll go down as some really good Disney music. Just kind of as we look back on this movie. Can you imagine that? It's really catchy, and I actually liked the balloon song at the end, whatever that one was. Nowhere to Go But Up.
I didn't like it at first, but it's one of those that grew on me. There's always that in a Disney movie for me. I'll use Moana as an example, right?
Was it Shiny that grew on you?
No. So there's always one that I don't really like at first, but then it grows on me. And then there's always one I just don't like at all. And then there's like my favorite go-to classic. So like, or Tangled, that's a good example. Like the opening number was fun, but I didn't really think about it much, but it became really catchy. Now I love playing it. My instant favorite was, what's the, I See the Light? I think that's what it's called. I See the Light was like the instant hit. And then the one that I never liked was like the mom song.
I didn't like the barroom.
Oh
song,
yeah, that one's kind of
Prancing Pony song.
Moana, right? The opening number. This is the problem, is I'm terrible with song titles. But the main theme song. I've been staring at the edge of the water. Yeah. I'll just sing each one. It's just going to be a thing. That's sorry, guys. That's all I know to do. That was the instant hit I loved.
It's
but
called How Far I'll Go.
How Far I'll Go. Thank you. Yeah. But then the one that I absolutely fell in love with that I didn't really think about much was the Maori song in the middle.
Right.
The
ships are going across the water and she finds all the ships in the cave.
Yes, that's it's so good. And that one is like, that grew on me a lot. And then Shiny is the turkey to me. So in Mary Poppins.
Yeah, like, also, I like Shiny now, but yeah. I think like it's one of those things where the more you listen to a soundtrack, you kind of get tired of the ones that get overplayed. And so then you start to like the more obscure ones.
Yeah,
like after
true.
You've listened to it for the 50th time.
So we'll start with the instant favorite that I still like to this day is Can You Imagine That? Very catchy, instantly, probably my favorite going out. But upon repeated listening, what I find myself listening to most that's grown on me, A Cover Is Not the Book. And I feel like I could just keep you talking about this music or singing badly about it, but then I figured it's better just to play it.
Chapter titles are like signs, and if you read between the lines, you'll find your first impression was mistook. For a cover is nice, but a cover is not the book.
So yeah, cover's not the book. Catchy at the beginning, but I just like how the pace goes, and it's kind of interesting how she affects a more lower class Cockney accent for no other apparent reason other than it just kind of works for the song.
Yeah, I think that was probably Lin-Manuel Miranda's best performance.
Yes.
As well, which, as far as the singing.
I erroneously made the assumption that he like wrote the music or wrote the lyrics. He in fact did not. It was Mark Shaiman who did both of the score and the music portion as well.
Right. Which the part that he sings where it's like the story and he's like, oh, isn't that a long story? And she's like, you know, whatever,
like,
and then he's got to sing it fast.
You're not talking about this part, are you?
The king and the queen clutched the jewels, for she hated royal fools, but this fool had some rules they really ought to teach in schools. Like, you'll be a happy king if you enjoy the things you've got.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that definitely brought me back to, like, Hamilton.
Yeah, definitely.
And kind of his style there. So I kind of wonder if he maybe had a little bit of input on that part of the song.
Definitely written for him and his talents.
Right, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But,
and for everyone that gives Dick Van Dyke a hard time for his accent in the original Mary Poppins, I don't think that Lin-Manuel Miranda was much better.
No, which he kind
I
of
mean, he still was joked super
about
cheesy.
Him. Yeah, no, that's true. That's true.
Which, I mean, I think is intentional. It's kind of like the charm of these movies is they're a bit over the top and even the accents are over the top. So I never like Dick Van Dyke's accent in the original never bothered me.
No.
But I know that's something that you hear a lot of criticism about.
Yeah, it's interesting. Also, Dick Van Dyke is much more of a comedian in his delivery than Lin-Manuel Miranda, who's more of a sort of sweetheart role. They're
definitely
very similar in a lot of ways, but that's probably the significant difference between the two character types. And then let's see. The one, the turkey.
What's the turkey? Turning turtle?
It means my whole world
yes.
goes flippity-flop. Like.
Yep. Like.
All is well, then I roll over.
That's like the point where I ran to the restroom the third time I watched the movie.
I was going to say, that is actually the one part of the movie that I just didn't care for at all. Like, I could have done without that
it was,
entire
I'm quite
segment.
Confident it was just a reason to get Meryl Streep in the movie and then put her in the trailers.
I think that's probably part of it. Another thing is, I think they were really trying to match the different beats of the original, and that was
the laughing song.
You know, laughing song, basically. Mm. She's got, instead of it being her crazy uncle who laughs himself to the ceiling, it's her
crazy
cousin who has a place that turns upside down. So, and that was like really right on the nose, I thought, maybe to a fault, is how much they really tried to mimic some of the things from the original movie. I mean, pretty much every big moment in this movie was a reflection on something from the first movie.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That would be the one part that it didn't really speak to me either. But of course, the big number of the film is Trip a Little Light. Fantastic.
You're finished, and your chance to dance is done.
And I love Dick Van Dyke's rendition.
It's the time to stand, to strike up the band, and tell them that you've just begun. So when life's a real piece of super.
I gotta say, this reminds me. probably my favorite upon the repeated viewings of the film. They did a really good job, and probably what you'll appreciate most if you upon rewatching it, Aaron, is the little layers and visual references to Colin Farrell's character and the two lawyers' character being the wolf, the badger, and the, I think, ferret. Whatever those were the three actors who played the two lawyers and Colin Farrell. Colin Farrell was the wolf, and then the other two actors were his two
henchmen. Colin Firth, right?
Or Colin Firth. Thank you. Okay. I do that all the time. It's so similar. Salt and pepper haired British actors.
Mr. Banks.
That is true. But listen, salt and pepper haired white British actors. Come on, it's too close. But yes,
I actually really enjoyed the two lawyer characters. I thought they were hilarious.
They were, that, especially the other one. And then, because you don't really see the animated characters that much, like the henchmen, the first time I watched it, I'm like, oh, they're henchmen. I didn't really pay attention to them. But then, like, upon repeated viewings, I would just watch what they were doing and all the little movements and stuff. Like the ferret dude, his eyes are kind of wide and he's a little hesitant in participating in the wolf and badger's hijinks. And it's really subtle, so you'll notice it more if you go back and watch it a second time. But I got it's almost everything I would want out of a Mary Poppins sequel, and especially with something that's as precious to me as Mary Poppins. Like, the original film is one of those few that I watched over and over and over again as a kid. Like, it was right up there with Fox and the Hound and some others that are absolute classics for me. So I'm very, very much appreciative of the way they did it. One or two small complaints, but I'd give it like a solid four and a half out of five stars if it were me.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I really was happy to see Dick Van Dyke have a role in the movie. That really made me happy at the end. And then Angela Lansbury out of nowhere. I don't know. I guess maybe they had announced that was going to be in the movie, but it was a complete surprise to me.
Oh, no. Yeah, again, that was something that they mentioned at D23, but I didn't see it in any of the marketing. So
yeah, I know she wasn't in the original, but it just felt like she was in the right place there. I really like seeing her. And yeah, I mean, it was a really fun movie. I definitely had my gripes with it, and I think I definitely need to see it again. But it was fun. I thought the kid who played Georgie was like great. Like, that's just a really good child actor. And then, I mean, Emily Blunt, I know you had talked about it before, but I just thought she nailed the role of Mary Poppins. Like, it was so seamless. And there was no moment where I was like, she's not really doing it, or she doesn't really, you know, get the character. Yeah. Like, I was just like, wow, she became that character.
Yeah, that she was the like crux of the film as to whether or not it would work. And it worked. It was a good time. Good time.
What we lamplighters call ourselves, of course. Time to send up the call to arms. Learys, trip the line to lead the way. Now when you're stuck in the mist, sure, you can struggle and resist, or you can trip a little like fantastic with me.
Now, and that is Mary Poppins Returns. And that's the final Disney film that was released in 2018. However, Happy New Year, everybody. It is 2019. And let's talk, Aaron, a little bit about what's upcoming in the Disney parks. Specifically, we've talked so much about Disneyland recently with the trip and with our trip out there and enjoying the Christmas time. Let's talk a little bit about Disney World. We'll hit some parks talk real quick, highlight some of the things that we can expect in 2019 coming from the parks, starting with Animal Kingdom. Well, let's ping pong this, Aaron. I'll take Animal Kingdom if you want to hit maybe Magic Kingdom, some of the stuff that's coming up there. Of course, Animal Kingdom, we're now just a little over a year into Pandora, the World of Avatar, in Animal Kingdom, making it the second most popular park, second only to Magic Kingdom, a big boon because it was the least attended park before. Let's see. So, okay, Flight of Passage, still the most popular ride in all of Walt Disney World, which, you know, well done. I still haven't done it.
But oh, yeah, it's well deserved. It's such a good ride, Riley.
Yeah, I'm going to this year. It's going to happen. But, you know, wait times are still usually over an hour, up to 2 hours. I think when we were there last year, it was like 90 minutes or at one point. But, it's still going to be long wait times in 2019. But Nighttime Spectacular, Rivers of Light, is now, it's just over a year old. Now,
which I still haven't seen that. I've been to Animal Kingdom a few times since it's been out, but
never at night.
Never, for whatever reason, never. I think it's because I was probably in line to see Flight of Passage.
Oh, yeah.
While that show was going on.
That makes sense. Yeah, because that would be when the line's finally not as bad. But two smaller new offerings coming to Animal Kingdom. The first is Up, A Great Bird Adventure, which will feature a mix of characters from Up and close-up encounters with bird species from around the world. This is replacing Flights of Wonder. I've never seen Flights of Wonder, which that sounds interesting. As you know, Up, one of my favorite Pixar films, and they kind of cleverly tying it in to kind of have a bird-themed attraction.
Yeah, I actually saw this, and the bird part of it is really cool, and you get to see all these exotic birds, and as long as the birds play along with what they're supposed to be doing, which it's kind of funny if they don't, but... so it was really entertaining and I saw it with the kids, but they also try to mix in kind of the costumed characters with it from the Up movie. I think they have, anytime the birds come out, they make the costumes characters go away because I think maybe the birds would be scared by them. So,
gotcha. Yeah.
But yeah, you get to see, what's the dog's name?
Pluto?
I forget now.
Pluto?
Huh?
Pluto? No, I'm like going way back to the original. Oh, I don't know. I don't remember. It's the, it's that guy. But I can't remember his name. Yeah.
Yeah. So the dog and the kid and everything come out. But yeah. Nice. So it's a pretty good show, but it's pretty new.
Nice. Hey, also Donald's Dino Bash. I almost said Dash. Like, that's not a Run Disney event. Donald's Dino Bash is the dance party and meet and greet in Dino Land, which is pretty cool. But what I'm probably most excited about is Animal Kingdom. They're celebrating, can't believe it, but Lion King's 25th anniversary with Hakuna Matata Time Dance Party. Was that good? Can they hire me for the ads?
Like, I think the dance parties are geared toward like a different age group, so it's just something I just don't get excited about.
Oh, come on,
about.
Aaron. We're going. We're going. let's you and I go to the... I can't do it. The Hakuna Matata Time Dance Party.
Those are the areas I avoid.
On Discovery Island. So it's going to have Timon and Rafiki... at present, nothing else has really been announced for Animal Kingdom, but nothing else really needs to be announced because, man, people love Pandora and want to keep going. I can't wait to go back to Animal Kingdom and finally get a chance to ride Flight of Passage. It'll happen this year. It's going to happen.
Nice. And I'm excited about Rafiki's Planet Watch opening back up because I know that's been closed for some refurbishments. And I never actually got around to going there.
Okay.
So I'm excited the next time I go to try to catch that.
I like it. All right, Magic Kingdom. What are we seeing here for 2019, Aaron?
Magic Kingdom doesn't really have anything new coming in 2019, but there are some new things coming like later. So the big thing right now is the Tron roller coaster, which is going to be coming to Tomorrowland.
Okay.
And that one is going to be coming out hopefully in time for the 50th anniversary in 2021. So we got a couple years to wait, but they have they have the Tron coaster in one of the international parks.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't remember a Tron, and I was like, oh, so it's going to be similar.
I think it's in Shanghai. They have the Tron coaster, which got really good reviews, like really popular. So they're bringing that ride to the U.S. at Magic Kingdom, so that'll be cool.
Oh yeah, that'll be nice. Yeah, Magic Kingdom again, classic park. And I look forward to, they don't really need to add much in Magic Kingdom. It stays pretty popular. Like, I feel like Animal Kingdom needed Flight of Passage and needed World of Avatar. But Magic Kingdom, like, you don't really need to do a lot to keep people coming.
Yeah, and they still do try to add things from time to time. I like the refreshes that they've done of the fireworks and the parade, like Festival of Fantasy Parade is pretty new and that's really good. And then obviously the Happily Ever After fireworks show and projection show is really good. So those are kind of the things they can kind of update over the years, but I think those two will stick around for a while.
Yeah. Well, let's jump over to Epcot. So of course, Soarin' Around the World and Frozen Ever After, they've each been there a little while now. It's still new to me. I hadn't done either of them until last year. Those have kind of settled in. They're of course going to have the festivals, the Flower and Garden festivals coming up. Of course, the Food and Wine Festival.
They're extending the dates of those.
What?
Yeah, so they're extending the dates for Flower and Garden and Food and Wine
Interesting. Is that a way? It's got to be a way too to kind of really keep the attendance up in the off season, like, because those are both like square in the middle of the school year, not the peak travel times for summers. Again, it's kind of going back to also the new price structure where they're trying to incentivize attendance in the off season.
Yeah, and they have the holiday festival too, which is similar. And we had kind of done the holiday festival out in Disneyland.
Yes.
But Epcot does their own version. So between those three festivals, they pretty much cover the entire year outside of the summer now. So any time of year you go down there, there's going to be some sort of festival or event where you can go around the pavilions and get the food and get the drink and all of that. Yeah. So it's making Epcot my favorite. Like, Epcot's such a favorite place to go now when I go to Disney.
Epcot is quickly becoming, they're also, Disney, man, as much as we were bragging about how great and quaint and not quite as crowded and more logistically easy to navigate Disneyland is, I'm just like, going through this makes me realize just how much Disney World has on Disneyland in so many ways. Because they're like Epcot, perfect example, quickly becoming my favorite, if not my favorite, park. Like, you know, Hollywood Studios is still my nostalgic favorite, but I, like, if you're asking me, hey, do you want to go hang out at Epcot, or hey, do you want to go hang out at Magic Kingdom? The answer is probably going to be Epcot. Again, not a lot new coming. Probably the most significant thing is an expansion to the World Showcase France Pavilion, and they're doing a new family-friendly Ratatouille trackless dark ride. Not a lot of details known about it, but and there's the Guardians of the Galaxy hybrid roller coaster as well that's going to debut in Future World, but sometime that's going to be like 2021, so that's not really going to be this. And even the Ratatouille thing is still an internal target date of 2020. So both of those are pretty far out there. Doesn't look like we have a lot major happening at Epcot in 2019, other than freaking the Wine and Dine half marathon, which I'm going to, unless I'm deployed somewhere, but which I'm going to. Oh man. All right, Hollywood Studios. It's my nostalgia park. It's the old days of Star Wars weekends.
Rest now it's peace. Toy Story Land and Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah. Well, I'm really excited about one of those.
Yeah. I mean, Toy Story Land is very new. And you had kind of heard my review of when I went. I was a little underwhelmed, but I did enjoy the Slinky Dog coaster. So that was fun.
Yeah.
But the big news, obviously, is Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah.
That's what we're all waiting for. And it's coming, we're hoping, in the fall. The rumor is around Thanksgiving or just after Thanksgiving, which I think is just crazy to me that they're going to open that part, that highly anticipated part of Hollywood Studios, right in the busiest time of year at Disney World.
Well, Memorial Day weekend's got to be the busiest, isn't it?
I think between Thanksgiving and Christmas is kind of their hottest season. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it is a very popular time to go, but.
Man. So yeah, I mean, the crowds
will be slightly less, because like I feel like our trip at the beginning of December to Disneyland helped with the crowds. I really feel like that was part of it, is that it's that between Thanksgiving and Christmas, people have probably already traveled for Thanksgiving, and you're not going to turn around and travel again for Christmas. So that beginning of December is a nice window. Of course, as we all well know, we'll have already been to Galaxy's Edge at Disneyland, which now they don't have the official date, but fun little side jag, Aaron. Bob Iger, in an interview yesterday, day before, kind of slipped and said something, you know, shooting for June. So, like, it sounds like an unofficial June start, which is on the earlier side. I thought they might do July at the earliest.
Yeah, and I wonder if they open that early in the year for Galaxy's Edge on the West Coast, if you'll get kind of the diehard Star Wars fans that just have to, you know, see it as soon as possible, kind of all go out there.
Basically,
and
us.
Not as many of them go to Florida.
We're going to both. Anyway, well, yeah. It's true. It's funny because it's true. Sorry, that was a little sidetrack. But yeah, that's going to be a pretty big boon to Hollywood Studios. Obviously, the biggest thing happening at Hollywood Studios next year.
Yeah, I would say by far the biggest, and I'm very curious on.
Oh, don't forget though, Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway replacing the what was it, the movie, the Great Movie Ride? Sad.
Yeah, I'm actually excited for that ride, the Runaway Railway. I think that animation, I like that kind of old style Mickey animation. They actually have a kind of these shorts that they play. that my son watches all the time and he thinks are hilarious. But it's kind of that kind of older animated, a little in your face and irreverent version of Mickey Mouse.
Mm-hmm,
so yeah. I'm kind of excited for this ride. I think it'll be something fun.
I want some of the anti-Nazi, you know, World War II propaganda. That's what I want. That'd be pretty great. I think that probably stray away from that, but you know, it is. And that is Hollywood Studios. Oh, but you know what? Let's touch on Disney Springs. I want to head out. It is like one of my favorite things to do is just hang out at Disney Springs. And they've been opening a bunch of restaurants and all kinds of things, but the whole reimagining, the construction, all of the stuff that's been going on at Disney Springs is pretty much done now, which is fantastic. They've had such additions as Boathouse. You remember, of course, Jock Ludzie's Hangar Bar. I didn't realize it was that new. I thought it'd been there a while.
Yeah, it's been there for a few years. I mean, the Disney Springs update is relatively new, but it's been happening across, the past 4 years?
Yeah, Morimoto Asia, the Edison, Four Rivers Cantina, and more. There's been a couple new restaurants and, of course, that new shopping district. It just works a lot more. The parking structures are much better. It's just a more pleasant experience than the old one I used to park behind the giant white tent.
I agree. Yeah, Cirque du Soleil, which they're doing an update to that too. I think they're doing a new show there. But yeah, that Disney Springs, I remember when Downtown Disney, when they announced that they were changing it to Disney Springs, I remember kind of the part of me that doesn't like change was like, what? Like, I love Downtown Disney. How dare you?
What the heck? What are you doing? How dare you?
And now I'm like, Disney Springs is so much better than Downtown Disney ever was.
Yeah. No, and that's what's going on at the parks. And you know what? I think we're going to have to touch on the films in the next episode because we've been talking around it with Galaxy's Edge and stuff at Hollywood Studios. There's an update on Galaxy's Edge at Disneyland. And, just listen for yourself, guys.
Ahead of Star Wars Land launching this summer, Disneyland has just raised prices. Effective yesterday, Disney's least expensive daily ticket has jumped above $100 for the first time, now $104. Regular demand and peak demand days now cost 10% more, while the price for annual passes is up 8% since the prior price increase. Now, this comes a year after Disneyland and California Adventure increased prices by as much as 18%. Now, these price hikes now come as Disney prepares for a surge of visitors for Star Wars Galaxy Edge. That's the 14-acre, $1 billion expansion of the park that includes two Star Wars-themed rides. CEO Bob Iger is saying at Disney's last earnings call that Star Wars Land is the biggest thing they've ever done at Disneyland since the park opened in 1955. He said it's going to drive a huge increase in demand, which will give Disney, quote, interesting challenges to manage that demand.
We can see how they're managing it. let's bring those prices up. So $104. Orlando, Disney World crossed $100 a while ago, though, for Magic Kingdom, right?
Yeah, I don't think you can get a ticket even value less than 100 for Disney World now.
Yeah. I remember, I think last year when I was looking at it, even the value tickets were, you know, I have to say to all this, thank you for military discounts because that makes it much more reasonably affordable. It's a lot of freaking money, especially for a family. It's on the edge of its, but it's the simple answer to the reason for these price hikes is they can. The demand is there. People will go. The price hikes last year did not affect attendance. Attendance continued to rise. So as they're doing stuff like all the expansions we just mentioned at Disney World, to say nothing of Galaxy's Edge, which I think is going to be a huge game changer, not just because I'm a biased Star Wars fan. I think they're well justified. As much as I kind of hate to say it, from a business perspective, I think they're well justified in it.
Yeah, I mean, these prices, I'm looking at the list, kind of the current prices versus new for Disneyland. And they're not jumping out to me as anything shocking.
Yeah.
The one-day value ticket is up $7.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other ones have a bigger jump, but
the season passes were the big, the annual pass holders ones have gone up a lot, too. I think those were ones that I remember seeing some headlines about that.
But I think, I mean, like you said, they can do it. The people will continue to come, and they know that they can raise the prices. And like, as a fan of Disney and that goes to these parks, I feel like you're getting your money's worth. I don't go there and feel like I got fleeced.
Yes.
You know, I feel like I went there and I had a good time and I spent my money well.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like just getting into the park is all. I mean, you're buying food and everything else too. So we all know, anyone that goes to Disney pretty regularly know that it's an expensive venture, but we usually leave very happy.
Yeah, no, very true. Very true. Yeah, and it's just a natural recurrence. And I got to say, it's also just the park tickets, even as expensive as they are, that's not how they make money. It's in the vacation packages. Like, there's a reason that if you book a vacation package through Disney and stay at the resorts, they discount the tickets so much per day, so that like the average ticket, if you buy like a 7-day vacation package through Disney, that like I think the average per day cost drops to almost in half. But that's because you're staying in their resort, you're going to be staying at the restaurants, they're selling you the dining package plan and like all those things to keep you coming back. But you know what? People keep coming back, and we keep coming back. Aaron, final question of the show, I figure a good way to end it is, what sort of park plans do you have this year? What's going to take you back to the parks and which parks, but either tentative or concrete?
This is an odd time for me because this is a rare time that I don't have my next Disney trip planned.
I know, right?
You know, and I think I did a lot of Disney last year. I think I did 5 trips total between going out to California and going to Florida. So I know I'll be at Disney this year. I just don't know when. I don't know why. I think probably Galaxy's Edge will drive me to the West Coast.
Yeah.
And I believe I'll try to do one of the Disney runs, probably Wine and Dine again.
Yes.
So at least 2 trips, you know. So but that's it. Like, that's all. But I've already started talking to my wife because the Princess Half Marathon's coming up. And I was like, what if we just flew down for like the weekend and just did the 10K? Because there's a cool Mulan medal for the 10K and I really want that medal. And she's like, stop.
But the Mulan medal's so cool.
It is cool. It's a really cool medal, and we could go down for like 2 days.
Well,
and
you know exactly
back.
what my girlfriend thinks of that. She would be thrilled with the Mulan medal. I'm sure
she loves just going to the races just for the medals, right?
Fun fact about that, and I'm not going to tell the whole story because she's going to be on at some point. I don't know how I'm going to rope her into this, but at some point, I'm going to tell the story of literally the first day I ever was working in an office beside my soon-to-be girlfriend, and randomly in conversation, I didn't even bring it up. I'll have to get her full version, but I didn't even bring it up. And like randomly, the topic. She's from the Orlando area, and it comes up like, I hate it. One of my pet peeves is the people who run those Disney races just for the freaking medals. A sentence that actually happened. So we'll have to tell that full story.
At this point, had you already run one?
I've run a few. In fact, at this point, I was thinking about the 2 Disney medals hanging up. Literally, I'm looking at them right now. I've got the Star Wars one and the Wine and Dine one from last year, or the year before. So
that's going to be part of my office decor.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find a way to display my medals.
Yes, yeah, like a shadow box or something. So anywho, that's kind of me. My trips line up with yours. I'm at a point now after talking to Bethany some about it, and funny enough, I think she'll come out too. My girlfriend will come out. Well, and possibly some other friends or family. I really, especially if Hickey can come out and a few other of the gang, and I would really like to prioritize getting the gang back together and going to Wine and Dine. I would even probably prioritize that over Galaxy's Edge, maybe almost. That's how much fun I had.
If we're lucky, Galaxy's Edge will already be open.
Exactly.
We're down there for that, because that is November.
So that's the one I really want to make happen. That's kind of my number one priority, and a close second is obviously Galaxy's Edge. But Galaxy's Edge is kind of a given. It's almost a professional responsibility at this point. But, of course, my big thing at this point is I don't know where my next duty location will be for my job. I'll find that out a little bit later in the year as to where I'll be going actually around March. So like my sort of travel schedule is based on my military leave and a bunch of stuff like that. So there's some factors that I won't really know in concrete for another month or two to be able to make those plans. But those are kind of the two things I definitely want to prioritize is Galaxy's Edge at Disneyland this summer. And then of course, the Wine and Dine in the fall. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. I think that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Mouse and Castle podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. Had a fantastic time. Aaron, as always, thank you so much.
Good times, yeah.
Tell people where they can find your illustrious voice and thoughts and opinions on the world of social media. Where do you break the internet, Aaron Goins?
Mainly just Twitter. I'm at AV Goins on Twitter. And then, you know, Instagram, I'm on it, but I don't really post much. But we have our Mouse and Castle Instagram, though, that you should check out.
Definitely, at Mouse and Castle. Same thing with the Mouse and Castle's Twitter. It's just at Mouse and Castle. Hey, also email mouseandcastle@gmail.com. Shoot us an email. We'd love to read them on a future episode. Your thoughts on Mary Poppins, maybe what you're looking forward to most in 2019 at the parks or film-wise. It's quite a slate of films coming up. I had an article. We weren't able to get to it this week, but we'll talk about it in the next episode about just some of the 10 films coming out in 2019. And I'm just saying, between Endgame and Episode 9 coming out in the same freaking year, it might be another flagship year for Disney.
Are we getting Lion King and Aladdin too?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, all in the same year. It's ridiculous. So we'll kind of look ahead in the next episode. So until next time, I'm going to say have a magical week. And remember, waltz in your heart. I don't know.
I was hoping for a Mary Poppins theme.
I know. I was like, you know what? Until next time, trip a little light, fantastic. And sometimes there's nowhere to go. Finish this up, Aaron.
Nowhere to go but turning turtle.
Okay, all right. I hate this outro so much. But I'm not changing it.
It's our thing now. We do bad outros.
That was a train wreck. That was our holiday special of outros. I was like, you know, it was going bad, so I was like, well, what's something cutesy I can do? I'll set him up for the little thing, you know, right at the end, you know. You know what? Sometimes there's nowhere to go, and I'm like, and he's gonna say butt up, but no, that didn't happen. And it just got worse.
You can't throw it to me and expect a serious response.
He's like, this is your job. The horrible outros are your job.
I'm making you regret ever throwing it to me. Yes. So you don't do it again.
I've learned my lesson. All right, let me stop the recording.